What we're going to look at next is the operational cooperation, I guess one would say, between some of the petroleum industry-linked southern reactionary elements in the United States. We're talking about the Hunt, Walker, John Birch Society elements that we've been talking about. And as we've seen, they intersect. They had formed an ideological and operational link with some of the petroleum industry intelligence Galen-linked milieu that we have also explored in the context of the assassination of John Kennedy. Now, I also want to underscore something that I will not have time to get to this evening. There is much more to this milieu than simply the elements that we are looking at. We're also talking about elements of the defense industry and major mainstream American political elements as well as the intelligence community and the military. Obviously, we're looking at the intelligence community tonight, but the milieu that was involved in killing President Kennedy and the milieu that is in control of our political fortunes to this day is larger than just the elements that we're looking at this evening, but these are some of the primary elements. And one of the reasons that I'm taking a look at the link-up between John Birch Society, Hunt, Walker elements, and some of these Third Reich alumni is that these elements actively collaborated in the assassination of John Kennedy, and that link-up between the American far right and these Third Reich alumni is, well, that link-up is not only important, but it seems to me that has to scare the living hell out of anybody with any kind of smarts, because these are the elements that are in control of our lives today. In order to look at how these elements collaborated in the assassination of John Kennedy, and we've been looking at the link-ups between these elements, we're going to turn once again to the Dallas Conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott. Much of the information that I'm about to set forth is also covered in a miscellaneous archive show entitled Edwin Walker, Lee Harvey Oswald, and the Fourth Reich. Turning now to the Dallas Conspiracy. Now, bear in mind that Lee, one of the central elements in the Warren Commission's thesis was that Lee Harvey Oswald was not politically motivated in his alleged assassination of John Kennedy because he also fired at Major General Edwin Walker. Now, Walker had been a divisional commander in Germany. He was relieved by President Kennedy of his command for obliging his troops to study the Blue Book of the John Birch Society. This was in direct contravention of military regulations. Oswald supposedly fired at Edwin Walker on April 10th of 1963. The Warren Commission did not go into why Lee Harvey Oswald was able to do what no marksman has ever been able to duplicate, namely getting off two accurate shots at a moving target at a distance of about 90 yards in 6 seconds, and why he happened to miss Edwin Walker, who was stationary sitting on the front porch of his house. As we shall see, the notion that Oswald shot at Walker is one of the most preposterous of the many absurdities presented by the Warren Commission. But what's interesting here is to take a look at how the story of Edwin Walker having supposedly been fired at by Lee Harvey Oswald was developed. Now, bear in mind something that we covered earlier in the broadcast. The white Russian community, this intelligence petroleum Galen milieu that we're looking at, and bear in mind that George Bush was part of this milieu, this particular milieu severed contact with the Oswalds from mid-April of 63 until 11/22. So let's take a look at the alleged shooting by Lee Harvey Oswald at Edwin Walker. Peter Dale Scott writes, in the Dallas Conspiracy, the Warren Commission, among its other failings, never established how it was possible for a neo-Nazi newspaper in Munich, which phoned General Edwin Walker at a Shreveport hotel on November 23, 1963, the day after the assassination, to learn that Oswald was the man who had shot at Walker on April 10th. The newspaper, the Deutsche Nationalzeitung und Soldatenzeitung, published this information in its issue of November 29th. Yet, as the report itself makes clear, quote, the FBI had no knowledge that Oswald was responsible for the attack until Marina Oswald revealed the information on December 3rd, unquote. When General Walker was unable to explain this access to Marina's secret, Commission Attorney Wesley Liebler Jr. himself attempted to explain the paradox by suggesting that the newspaper had been, quote, post-dated, unquote, or, in an even clumsier effort to correct this absurdity, quote, predated, unquote. Of course, we took a look at Wesley Liebler, Carter Ledyard and Milburn, Wisner, etc., just before the break. Peter Dale Scott continues, in fact, the Sudeten Zeitung, as the commission established, was actually printed on November 25th or 26th. Now, again, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out that if the information was supposedly first surfaced to the FBI on December 3rd and they told the Warren Commission, it obviously is a firm indication of conspiracy that Edwin Walker was able to communicate this information to a German neo-Nazi newspaper on November 23rd, and they were able to publish it on November 29th, days before Marina supposedly revealed the secret. Bear in mind that George de Morenschild corroborated Marina's story, as we looked at earlier. Now, about this particular Munich newspaper, and here we're going to see, with the shooting of the alleged shooting by Lee Harvey Oswald at Edwin Walker, we are going to see the operational link-up between the Southern Rim John Birch Society elements, the linked elements that we've been looking at, and the German-based Galen-linked elements, which are going to come into increasing focus as we proceed in the broadcast. Peter Dale Scott writes, the Munich newspaper with which Walker communicated on November 23rd was linked to the world movement for a second anti-Comintern and also to the American right. In February of 1957, for example, the paper, then called the Deutsche Soldaten Zeitung, with several ex-Nazis and SS men on its staff, had collaborated in a complex political intrigue with Fritz Kramer's People's League for Peace and Freedom, the German constituent element in CIAS, of which Kramer was also president. By the way, we're going to come to Fritz Kramer, that's C-R-A-M-E-R, later in the program. The paper's editor, Gerhard Frey, F-R-E-Y, is a close political friend of the proto-Nazi Witiko League, W-I-T-I-K-O, a Sudeten revanchist group which in turn maintains close relations with the ABN and with the BHE refugee party of APACL delegate Dr. Theodor Oberlander. Frey's paper publishes a refugee paper, Der Sudetendeutsche, for the Witiko League, and in 1958, Walter Becker, B-E-C-H-E-R, the Witiko League chairman and Bavarian chief of the BHE, made a triumphant tour of U.S. right-wing circles. His views were published by such well-known American rightists as Dallas FBI veteran Dan Smoot, S-M-O-O-T, Army intelligence veteran Charles Willoughby, MacArthur's former intelligence chief, and the American Mercury, whose subsequent military editor in 1963 was General Edwin Walker. Walker himself, in his interview with the Sudeten Zeitung, sent special greetings to his German friend, Dr. Frey. By the way, Gerhard Frey later became affiliated with a German neo-Nazi group called the Sportgruppe Hoffmann, one of whose key operatives was a fellow named Otfried Hepp, who we've looked at in connection with Abu Abbas's Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, the Achille Lauro hijacking, and Manzer el-Kassar. Well, as if the notion that somehow Edwin Walker could have divined that it was Lee Harvey Oswald who had shot at him days before Marina supposedly revealed this information to the world, proof of the absurdity of the Warren Commission's contention that Lee Harvey Oswald shot at Edwin Walker is found in an examination of the physical evidence in the Walker shooting. Again, turning it to the Dallas Conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott, Scott writes, before December 3rd, there was one publicly identified piece of physical evidence in the Walker shooting, a bullet recovered at the time from the Walker residence. Dallas police and the U.S. press, including Newsweek and the New York Times, had promptly identified the bullet as a .30-06, an identification made so easily it was in the Dallas Morning News only a few hours after the assassination attempt. Right after the Kennedy assassination, both the district attorney and the Dallas policeman who found a rifle in the Texas Book Depository building described it as a 7.65-millimeter Mauser, i.e. a NATO issue, calibrated to take .30-06 ammunition. 7.65 millimeters equals 0.3006th of an inch. Later, both the Dallas police and the Warren Commission systematically denigrated this testimony, since their final story was that the rifle in question was the 6.5-millimeter Mannlicher Carcano sold to, quote, A. Hedel, unquote, an alias of Oswald's. The Walker story in the Munich paper is thus compatible with and probably based on the short-lived story of the 7.65mm Mauser. The Warren Report still maintains that Oswald possessed only one rifle, a 6.5mm Mannlicher Carcano, which he used against both Walker and Kennedy. What, then, of the Walker bullet, which the Dallas police had easily identified as, quote, 30.06 in April? It was now so, quote, badly mutilated, unquote, that the Dallas City County Investigation Laboratory could not determine, quote, the type of weapon which fired the bullet, unquote. The FBI, using more sophisticated techniques, determined that the bullet supplied it by the Dallas police, quote, was a 6.5mm bullet, unquote, instead of a 7.65mm, and microscopic tests revealed further that the general rifling characteristics of the Mannlicher Carcano, quote, are of the same type as those found on the bullet, unquote. Whereas the bullet once was identified by the initials of patrolman B. Norvell, N-O-R-V-E-L-L, who found it, it now carried the last name of Lieutenant J. C. Day, D-A-Y, the same man who removed the alleged rifle of Oswald from the Texas Book Depository. Commission Exhibits 573, the, quote, shrinking bullet, unquote, is physical evidence suggesting a conspiracy to suppress the true facts about the assassination. Now, my guess is, interjecting, that failure analysis of Menlo Park will not deal with this particular aspect of the Warren Commission's thesis. And again, you don't have to be Sherlock Holmes to figure out that this is clearly ridiculous. We're looking at it here, however, in order to observe the operational functioning of the Southern Rim reactionary elements grouped around the Hunt family, John Birch Society, and H.L. Hunt protege Edwin Walker, and some of these German-based Galen elements, an extension of which were instrumental in handling the Oswalds in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Now, a few of the names that we're going to be looking at greater length here are a fellow named Fritz Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, not to be confused with another German-born Fritz Kramer who became the plans officer for the United States Army from 1949 to 70. Two of his protégés were Henry Kissinger and Alexander Haig. Bear in mind that the same organization, the Deutsche Nationalzeitung und Soldatenzeitung of Gerhard Frey, with several former ex-Nazis and SS men on its staff, was very close to the aforementioned Theodor Oberlander. Now, also note that they were involved with a fellow named Walter Becker, who headed up the Wittico League, a group of revanchist Germans looking to restore the Sudetenland, part of Czechoslovakia, to the Germans that had been appropriated by Adolf Hitler in one of his first acts of territorial aggression. Note also that Walter Becker had made what Peter Dale Scott describes as a triumphant tour of American right-wing circles and was hailed by such people as Dan Smoot, one of the prime movers of the American far-right in the 50s and 60s, people like the aforementioned General Charles Willoughby, who we're going to be looking at again in a couple of minutes, and they enjoyed tremendous support from these elements. That is to say, Becker and the Wittico League. We went into this, by the way, in Radio Free America program number 11, and I would note here that among the supporters of Walter Becker was then-Senator Prescott Bush Sr., the close friend of William Casey, Reagan's campaign manager and CIA director throughout much of the 80s. And, of course, we took a look at Prescott Bush Sr. and his involvement with the transatlantic industrial and financial axis that supported Hitler and Mussolini. And we also took a look at some of the networking involved between Prescott Bush and some of the Yale CIA elements that may very well have been involved with getting Lee Harvey Oswald, George Bush, into the CIA. Also, take note of the fact that among the many absolute absurdities, physical impossibilities, was the 7.65mm Mauser bullet, which was clearly identified by numerous sources, which then mysteriously metamorphosed into a 6.5mm Carcano round in order to conform to the Warren Commission's thesis. Note also that whereas initially that bullet carried the initials of Patrolman B. Norvell, later on it carried the initials Lieutenant J. C. Day, who was the individual who found that particular rifle in the Texas School Book Depository. The Walker shooting is one of among the many absolutely absurd elements of the many, many absurdities in the Warren Commission's thesis. We're looking at it here, however, in order to gain an historical understanding of the forces which conspired not only to destroy President Kennedy, but those forces have been ascendant in the political world in the years since, and they are triumphant in the world today. Again, we're looking at the petroleum intelligence milieu as the breeding ground for this active cooperation, both ideological and operational, between elements of the American right, elements of the U.S. national security establishment, and many of the Third Reich alumni who we've been looking at in connection with the Galen anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations related elements. What are we going to look at now? Again, turning to a long section of the Dallas Conspiracy, and this, by the way, was covered in Radio Free America program number 15. I'm going to review and analyze it here as part of the program. We're now going to take a look at the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, what it is, what the World Anti-Communist Conference for Freedom and Liberation was. We're going to take a look at how this particular organization, the WACCFL, the seed group for what later became known as the World Anti-Communist League, we're going to take a look at how this particular organization represented a reconstitution of the anti-Comintern organization put together by Adolf Hitler and Joseph Goebbels in the Third Reich. The anti-Comintern was a worldwide consortium of fascist groups that was utilized to a very successful degree by the Third Reich, not only for propaganda, but also for intelligence purposes. And basically, as Professor Scott discusses here, the WACCFL was essentially the reconstitution of the anti-Comintern movement, the Comintern being the International Communist Organization of Joseph Stalin. Hitler and Goebbels were very successful in marketing fascism as an antidote to fascism, to communism, I should say, and this was, the anti-Comintern was the organization that they used. I want listeners to take note of the continuity between elements involved in the original anti-Comintern and elements involved in the WACCFL, which became the World Anti-Communist League, the second anti-Comintern, because this organization essentially represents a reconstitution of major political elements and operational elements of the Third Reich. Turning now, once again, to the Dallas Conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott. He writes, "One can look more closely at the circumstances of Oswald's return to the United States and see a hidden network behind the apparently, quote, low-level, unquote, personnel who encountered him. In support of the FBI's story that it did not meet Oswald in New York, the report, on the basis of ample documentation, informs us that, on arrival, the Oswalds were met, quote, by Spaz T. Raikin, R-A-I-K-I-N, a representative of the Travelers Aid Society who, quote, helped them through customs, unquote. But Raikin was as unusual a welfare worker as Oswald was a shipping agent. A Taiwan publication of the Asian People's Anti-Communist League, APACL, reveals that Spaz T. Raikin was Secretary General of the American Friends of the Anti-Bolshevik Nations Incorporated, AFABN. As such, Raikin was in personal contact with the APACL and thus indeed with the Central Committee of the Kuomintang in Taiwan. Take note, too, that the Fry organization was very close to this organization, as well as close to the aforementioned Theodor Oberlander. Continuing here, if it is true that Raikin met Oswald at the boat, then Oswald would have been in direct contact with a semi-covert and supranational anti-communist organization, one which had strong intelligence connections. This new anti-Comintern, in which both the APACL and ABN were represented, had direct personal links with the abortive international anti-Comintern established by Hitler and Goebbels in the 1930s. The anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations, or ABN, with its American lobby, the AFABN, was similar to, but slightly to the right of, the CIA-supported Assembly of Captive European Nations, or ACEN, with its U.S. CIA front, the American Friends of the Captive Nations, headed by Christopher Emmett, capital E-double-M-E-T. Whereas the ACEN lobbied for the, quote, liberation, unquote, of Poland, Czechoslovakia, and the rest of the area between the Iron Curtain and the USSR, the ABN also sought the liberation of the Ukraine, Armenia, Georgia, Kasakhia, Azerbaijan, Idel-Ural, Turkestan, and of other ethnic nationalities inside the 1939 borders of the Soviet Union. I would add, of course, that has since taken place. So let's take a look at what we've seen in this first section. Again, Oswald. Now, bear in mind, Oswald was supposedly a traitor to the United States. One of the things that makes his association, his involvement with the CIA's anti-Castro Cuban milieu in New Orleans, and then with these doctrinaire, hardline fascists and anti-communists in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, petroleum industry and aerospace industry high rollers associated with the Galen organization, was that Oswald was an avowed Marxist who had supposedly defected to the United States with top-secret information, as I said, about our North American radar defense nets as well as the U-2 project, and yet he was not arrested, he was not charged with treason. He comes back to the United States and simply begins moving around with people who are the very ideological polar opposite of what he supposedly was. Oswald was almost certainly a U.S. intelligence operative of some kind who was given a left cover. That left cover, as we shall see, led people involved with the Warren Commission, some of them anyway, to cover up the Kennedy assassination because they were afraid that if the public perceived that a popular president had been assassinated by a communist, that might lead to a Third World War. Now bear in mind, again, as I've said, this new anti-Comintern, the WACCFL, will represent, as we shall see, it represents a reconstitution of many of the same elements which were involved with Hitler and Goebbels and the first anti-Comintern prior to and during the Second World War. And bear in mind, too, now this is very important, that the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, in contrast with the NTS, the Solidarists, also a Russian emigre organization which fought with the Third Reich and worked with U.S. intelligence following the Galen jump to the CIA, the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations sought to break up the Soviet Union into its constituent ethnic republics, whereas the NTS sought to simply eliminate communism and to retain the territorial integrity of the former Soviet Union. Now, as we shall see later on in the program, the operational methodology and tactics of the NTS, the Solidarists, involved infiltrating and turning, in effect, the Soviet army. And the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations sought the the breaking up of the Soviet Union. What we're going to be looking at is the successful prosecution by U.S. intelligence involving some of these same elements of the NTS methodology, infiltrating and turning the Soviet Union's national security apparatus and the army in particular, and the realization of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations' political goals, namely the breakup of the Soviet Union into its constituent ethnic republics. This has now happened. I would note, too, that the RUK organization, which is the dominant Ukrainian nationalist organization, looks for its inspiration to Stepan Bandera of the aforementioned OUN-UPA, a key element of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. And Russian President Boris Yeltsin is very close to something called the Free Congress Foundation, founded by Heritage Foundation founder Paul Weyrich, one of the guiding lights of the American far right. And I would note that the Free Congress Foundation, as we looked at in Radio Free America program number 36, is deeply involved with the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. The director of its Eastern European operations is a fellow named Laszlo Pastor, P-A-S-Z-T-O-R, who, as we shall see, was a member of the Arrow Cross organization, the Hungarian fascist organization that fought alongside Hitler during World War II. And the ABN is very close to Boris Yeltsin, acting through the Free Congress Foundation. So in a very real sense, we can see in the present makeup of what was the former Soviet Union the realization of the goal of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, again, as we have seen, put together by Adolf Hitler in 1943. Continuing now with the Dallas Conspiracy by Peter Dale Scott. At the heart of the ABN alliance were the resources of two actual post-war underground movements, the Hungarian Freedom Fighters and the Ukrainian OUN, or Underground Army. By 1960, however, the ABN had come to concentrate on psychological and political warfare. Thus, it competed with Russian emigre organizations such as the NTS, to be discussed shortly. I would interject we've already discussed that, for places in U.S.-supported Psy war activities like Radio Liberation, later renamed Radio Liberty in Munich. It also participated in planning for a grand world alliance of world anti-communist forces to be called the World Anti-Communist Congress for Freedom and Liberation, or WACCFL, whose composition is indicated by the 15-man steering committee elected at a preparatory conference in Mexico City in March of 1958. The Mexico City Conference was itself called in response to the Taipei Statement of an international group meeting in October of 1957 in Taiwan. Chiang Kai-shek of Taiwan, Syngman Rhee, R-H-E-E, of South Korea, and Diem of South Vietnam were each represented in this steering committee by a top figure in their respective party apparatus. German veterans of Hitler's frustrated anti-Comintern and Ostpolitik programs were included, notably Fritz Kramer, C-R-A-M-E-R, of the CIAS, the Committee for Information and Social Activity, a former officer of the Abwehr in Riga and Lisbon from 1939 to 45. Alfred Gielen, G-I-E-L-E-N, not to be confused, by the way, with Reinhard Gehlen, CIAS Secretary General and a former Nazi publicist for Goebbels anti-Comintern, became the WACCFL Steering Committee's Regional Secretary for Europe. And in a footnote to that passage, Peter Dale Scott adds, in the 1950s, Kramer was also president of Eberhard Tauberts, T-A-U-B-E-R-T, Volksbund für Frieden und Freiheit, or VFF, an industry-financed private vigilance group to ferret out and maintain files on German leftists. Taubert, the head of Division Pro 2 in Goebbels' propaganda ministry, had, quote, prided himself on being the wire puller behind the anti-Comintern, unquote. And in another footnote, Peter Dale Scott adds, Alfred B. Gielen, Das Rotbuch über Spanien, Berlin, Nibelungen Verlag, 1937, published for the anti-Comintern under a large swastika. Taubert was the political director of the Nibelungen publishing house. And continuing with Peter Dale Scott's text here, the American representatives were veteran China lobbyist Charles Edison, E-D-I-S-O-N, of the John Birch Society and American Security Council, and Lev Dobryansky, D-O-B-R-I-A-N-S-K-Y, a Ukrainian-American Army Reserve officer and professor at Georgetown University with close links to Army intelligence circles. The ABN had two of the 15 seats on the World Committee, one less than Latin America. Its representatives were Yaroslav Stetsko, S-T-E-T-Z-K-O, briefly a premier of the short-lived Ukrainian Republic at the time of the 1941 German invasion, and Ferenc Farkas, F-A-R-K-A-S, the ABN military chief who commanded the army of Arrow Cross Chief Ferenc Zalazi, S-Z-A-L-A-S-I, executed as a war criminal against the Russians in World War II. By the way, Ferenc is spelled F-E-R-E-N-C. Now let's pause for just a minute to analyze some of the forces that we're looking at here. And again, we're looking at an element which, as we shall see, had hooked up with the American far right and the American national security establishment in order to help assassinate President Kennedy. Now, by way of analyzing, I really should say, the forces that we've been looking at, note again, now as we take a look at the composition of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations, two of the main elements were the Hungarian freedom fighters, which descended from the Arrow Cross organization of fascist Hungary, and the OUNUPA organization of Stefan Bandera, whom we've already discussed, and who we're going to be looking at in a big way a little bit later in the broadcast. By the way, I would mention that in addition to Germany, Italy, and Japan, the Axis nations of World War II also included Hungary, Romania, and Bulgaria, as well as, for a time, Finland, something unfortunately a lot of people do not know. Now note that the ABN competed with the NTS, the Solidarists, whom we've already looked at, including Igor Voshinin, one of Marina Oswald's handlers after the assassination, and one of the people who helped extract false testimony from Marina Oswald. The NTS and the ABN collaborated in the WACCFL, which is to become the World Anti-Communist League. Later, however, the ABN, which did not wish to retain the territorial integrity of the old Russian Empire, drove out the NTS, but all of them worked with the Asian People's Anti-Communist League of the nationalist Chinese government of Chiang Kai-shek. By the way, we took a look at the distinct fascist affiliations of the nationalist Chinese and Chiang Kai-shek in Radio Free America program number 11. Now take a look, too, at the reconstitution of the original anti-Comintern put together by Hitler and Goebbels in this second anti-Comintern. Take note of a fellow who was very close to Gerhard Fry, the fellow with whom Edwin Walker communicated and with whom he spoke to communicate the information about Lee Harvey Oswald having supposedly fired at him, that on November 23rd of 63, when Marina Oswald had supposedly disclosed this for the first time on December 3rd. One of the people we look at here is Fritz Kramer, an Abwehr agent, a Third Reich military intelligence agent in both Riga in what is now Latvia, as well as in Lisbon of Portugal. Now, Fritz Kramer and his organization, the CIAS, basically is a proto-Nazi political activist organization in Germany, or was. He, in turn, was very active on behalf of an organization called VFF, which kept files on German leftists and which sought to ferret them out so they would not participate in key German industry, defense industry in particular. Now, Eberhard Taubert was actually a member of the pro-2 Goebbels propaganda ministry and was deeply involved with the original anti-Comintern of the Third Reich. Note also that the Secretary General of Fritz Kramer's CIAS organization is a fellow named Alfred Gielen, again, G-I-E-L-E-N, don't confuse that with Reinhard Gehlen, and he also worked with Goebbels' anti-Comintern movement. He became the WACCFL Regional Secretary for Europe, and he published for the Nibelungen Publishing House that was owned and headed up by Eberhard Taubert of the VFF, who also worked with Fritz Kramer. And so again, what we're looking at here is an actual reconstitution of significant elements of the original anti-Comintern movement, and this organization in turn hooks up with the American far right, elements of our intelligence system, national security establishment, the petroleum industry, and that's the milieu we're looking at here. And this organization, this milieu, I should say, becomes the ascendant political entity in the United States and then the world, and it is explicitly fascist. And bear in mind again that George Bush was deeply involved with this milieu, if not the actual assassination of John Kennedy. Now, take note here, too, of a few other names and organizations. First of all, take note of the American Security Council, which is very close to the anti-Bolshevik Bloc of Nations. We're going to go back to that very shortly. One of the people that was involved in the original WACCFL conference was Charles Edison of the American Security Council. Also take note of Lev Dobryansky, a Ukrainian-American who was another key member of the WACCFL planning session. Lev Dobryansky later became Ronald Reagan's ambassador to the Bahamas, and his daughter, Paula Dobryansky, and again, last name D-O-B-R-I-A-N-S-K-Y, sat on Reagan's National Security Council with Oliver North. Yaroslav Stetsko was for a time the head of a short-lived independent Ukraine under Third Reich auspices. Later, the Third Reich formally took over that organization. But the Yaroslav Stetsko, also very close to the OUN-UPA, and we've taken a look at how Theodor Oberlander, another key player in the situation we're looking at, was head of the Einsatzgruppe Nachtigall, which liquidated the ghetto of Lvov/Lemberg. And bear in mind that that particular organization was headed up or was composed largely of Ukrainian fascists from the OUN-UPA, and again, many of them brought to the United States by the Office of Policy Coordination, headed up by Deputy Director of CIA Frank Wisner. He was Deputy DCI at the same time that another senior partner in Carter Ledyard Milburn, the aforementioned William Harding Jackson, was also a Deputy Director of Central Intelligence, and Wesley Liebler, in charge with the Warren Commission Council and charged with investigating these connections, was also from Carter, Ledyard, and Milburn. And again, the word networking and the book The Old Boys by Burton Hirsch is recommended under the circumstances. Take note also of the presence of Arrow Cross veteran Ferenc Farkas on the steering committee, the WACCFL planning session. And bear in mind, again, that another veteran of the fascist Arrow Cross organization, Laszlo Pastor, became the director for Eastern European activities of the Free Congress Foundation, which is very close to and intimately involved with the political fortunes of the Boris Yeltsin, currently the president of the independent Russia. Continuing now with Peter Dale Scott's essay, actually not essay, monograph. By 1962, both the new anti-Comintern movement and the American Friends of the ABN in particular were profoundly dissatisfied with the Kennedy State Department. Dean Russ, Kennedy's Secretary of State, in opposing the demands of the AF-ABN and allied groups for a permanent Congressional Captive Nations Committee, went out of his way to refer to Ukraine, Armenia, and Georgia not as, quote, nations, unquote, but as, quote, traditional parts of the Soviet Union, unquote. Rusk did not want the U.S., quote, in the undesirable position of seeming to advocate the dismemberment of an historical state, unquote. This Rusk letter, like other features of the Kennedy administration's Russian policy, was repeatedly polemicized against by ABN and other émigré elements, including a sympathetic veteran of Army intelligence, Charles Willoughby, of the American Security Council. Recall, interrupting here, that he, of course, was MacArthur's intelligence chief for many years, again, a German-born fascist who, after his retirement, became an advisor to Francisco Franco, the fascist dictator of Spain. Continuing now with Peter Dale Scott's text. Was Oswald ignored by the FBI and New York City and instead met and cared for by Spaz T. Reagan, the Secretary General of the AFABN? So the report would have us believe, but a simpler and less conspiratorial explanation, albeit unprovable, is that Reagan was himself some kind of agent either for the FBI or some analogous agency such as the CIA or Army Intelligence. If he was not, then the contact and or surveillance which one would expect from the FBI had somehow been delegated to a member of a right-wing political organization which, despite its intelligence connections, was directly engaged in a bitter polemic with the Kennedy administration. This polemic dealt with the issue of, quote, rolling back communism in Europe, unquote, but all, excuse me, one more time. This polemic dealt not only with the issue of, quote, rolling back, unquote, communism in Eastern Europe, but also with the politically related issues of a permanent Volunteer Freedom Corps, or U.S.-supported Foreign Legion, a permanent Freedom Academy for training in psychological warfare, and a permanent Captive Nations Committee of the U.S. Congress. On the first two issues, the AF-ABN position was also lobbied for vigorously by the APACL, and also in America, by the American Security Council, a private coalition of industrialists and intelligence veterans which had been set up in 1955 by ex-agents of the FBI. The American Security Council, like Fritz Kramer's sister outfit in West Germany, the VFF, ran security checks on individuals seeking employment in private industry. Its index of over 1 million alleged subversives, quote-unquote, was based on the anti-Semitic files of Harry A. Jung's American Vigilant Intelligence Federation, which had collaborated with the Goebbels-Taubert anti-Comintern in the 1930s. Jung, by the way, is J-U-N-G. Continuing. Lev Dobryansky, described in Who's Who as the author of the Congressional Captive Nations Week resolution, and former Army General Charles Willoughby, MacArthur's top intelligence officer, were perhaps the two leading supporters of the ABN and Ukrainian cause. Both men were Republicans associated with former McCarthy aide Robert Morris in the American Security Council and in interlocking right-wing organizations such as the Young Americans for Freedom Advisory Board. Both men opposed the pro-Russian sympathies of the CIA and had connections with the FBI and the Army Reserve, which will figure prominently in the Oswald narrative. By the way, I would note here that pro-Russian here is not to be interpreted as pro-Soviet, but compared with what the ABN wanted, pro-Russian. Now, this probably belongs in quotes. Continuing. Dobryansky, who taught regularly at Georgetown University, also taught at the Army's National War College. In 1958, He was appointed lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve's 352nd Division for, quote, military government civil affairs, unquote, with responsibilities vaguely reminiscent of the movie, quote, 7 Days in May, unquote. Anthony Buscari, Buscarri, a third pro-ABN spokesman associated with Dobryansky and Willoughby in the American Security Council and the Young Americans for Freedom, attracts our attention because, like Oswald, he served in the Marines. Well, let's pause here and take a look at what we have seen in this particular section of Peter Dale Scott's monograph. Now, again, the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations and of this new anti-Comintern, this reincarnation of the Hitler-Goebbels organization of the 30s and 40s, this organization bitterly opposed Kennedy's Secretary of State, Dean Rusk, who went out of his way to recognize the historical or the territorial integrity of the Soviet Union and made a point of indicating that he did not seek to dismantle a, quote, historical entity, i.e. the USSR, formerly the old Russian Empire. Now, of course, the NTS that we've looked at earlier was in agreement with preserving the territorial integrity. The ABN, which originally was a vehicle for Hitler's Ostpolitik, again, formed by Adolf Hitler in 1943, sought the breakup of the Soviet Union into its constituent ethnic republics. Now, one of the main vehicles of ABN support in the United States and one of the major links between American reactionary political culture and the World Anti-Communist League is the American Security Council, an organization, by the way, deeply involved with the Reagan administration. The American Security Council, recall, functions very much like the VFF and CIAS of Fritz Kramer and Eberhard Taubert. Again, Eberhard Taubert was actually a veteran, one of the main organizers of the anti-Comintern, and in turn, one of his employees, Alfred Gielen, was the regional secretary for the WACCFL and also worked with Fritz Kramer in the CIAS. Now, the American Security Council's index of, quote, subversives, a million, numbering a million, were based on the anti-Semitic files of Harry A. Young's American Vigilant Intelligence Federation, which had collaborated, again, with the Goebbels-Taubert anti-Comintern. So we see the American Security Council here, again, involving Lev Dobryansky and people like Charles Willoughby, the fascist who had been MacArthur's intelligence chief. We see the American Security Council growing out of an organization, an American fascist organization, which had actually been an American touchdown point for the first anti-Comintern. So on both sides of the Atlantic, with Fritz Kramer slash Eberhard Taubert slash Alfred Gielen and the VFF CIAS, as well as with the corresponding organization, the ASC, based on Harry A. Young's American Vigilant Organization, we see reconstituted on both sides of the Atlantic original elements of Hitler's anti- and Goebbels anti-Comintern from the 1930s. I would also take note that Lev Dobryansky was a lieutenant colonel in the Army Reserve's 352nd Division for Military and Government Civil Affairs. This basically was a martial law contingency group, which, as Professor Scott has noted here, had responsibilities vaguely reminiscent of the novel 7 Days in May about an abortive military coup in the United States. As we looked at in the Guns of November and other broadcasts, the Kennedy assassination, the assassination of President Kennedy, was a successful military coup. Now, again, we're looking at these elements, and I'm analyzing them in detail so that we can come to understand the nature of the historical forces which destroyed President Kennedy and which came into ascendance in the world as a result. And we can see in the breakup, the territorial dissolution of the former Soviet Union, the realization of the goal, the operational goal of the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations. And although Hitler originally sought to dominate the entire Soviet Union and control it, because according to Nazi racial theory, Slavs were viewed as inferior, later, particularly after the German army began to suffer the enormous casualties and the attrition on the Eastern Front, Theodor Oberlander, again, the person we've looked at earlier, among others, helped to form a revised Ostpolitik for the Third Reich, and the anti-Bolshevik bloc of nations was instrumental in this. This sought to enlist various Russian ethnic minorities in the German war effort as soldiers in return for a promise of independence after the war. The various constituent ethnic republics of the Soviet Union were to be granted their independence. They would simply be satellite states and fascist cooperative states of the Third Reich. What we're going to look at now is the role of the WACCFL in helping to create the myth that Lee Harvey Oswald was a Soviet agent and that therefore the assassination of President Kennedy was performed by the Soviet Union. This was instrumental in helping to oblige some members of the Warren Commission to cover up the truth about the Kennedy assassination, because again, the official version is absolutely ludicrous, as we've seen and as we looked at in our other programs. But the fact that Lee Harvey Oswald had been given a left cover and linked with the Soviet Union and Castro led many people to cover the assassination up, because they felt that if the truth came out about President Kennedy's assassination, it would lead to a Third World War. We're going to touch briefly now on an article in a magazine called Tikkun, T-I-K-K-U-N. This, once again, will feature Peter Dale Scott. By the way, research credit on this belongs to a listener.